Okay, so yeah, hi everyone. I'm Julia Fukuyama. I'm a PhD student here in the statistics department at Stanford. I'm working with Susan Holmes, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about some work I've been doing about kind of tree-structured ordinations, and with the main application being to microbiome data. So just a note, ordinations is a word kind of from the ecology discipline. It means kind of putting things in order. So PCA, for example, is an ordination method, or multidimensional scaling, various methods like that. So just so that you know all of the words. So the setup here, so the general setup here is that we have a data matrix, just an n by p data matrix, n observations, p variables. And in addition to this matrix, this data matrix, we have information about kind of the similarity or dissimilarity between the variables. So like concretely, in the microbiome case, what we're going to have is X is going to be a count matrix. It's going to, we're looking at the number of species we see in each of like a bunch of locations or people or something like that. And in addition, we have information about the species. We know that we know their phylogenetic history. We know how they're related to each other. So you have this idea that different species are, you know, more or less similar to each other, and we're going to want to include that in our analysis. Okay, so I'm going to give you kind of two kinds of motivations for this. So the first one comes kind of from statistical theory. So we know we're often in this case where we have fewer samples than variables. And in this case, we know like PCA is inconsistent. It's not going to give us the correct result. And so basically the way we fix this is we use some sort of regularization. So the most common is to put a sparsity penalty on the variables, and this gives us, you know, sparse PCA, which is, you know, very popular and gives nice results. But for us, instead of sparsity, just as a regularization, we're going to use the information about the similarity between the variables. So this is going to give us kind of a parsimonious explanation of the PCA axes, but in a different way from the kind of standard sparsity, sparse PCA method. Okay. So then another kind of more visual motivation for why we might want to do this. So suppose we have a microbiome data set. So this data set is the microbiomes of three people were sampled, you know, over the several dozen times. We do PCA on this, and we get this is a plot of the samples. So we get this nice structure to our data from in the PCA. We see these three clusters that correspond to the different individuals that we sampled. We see that there's kind of, they were either sampled when they were taking antibiotics or not, which is the color. And so we see there's kind of a difference there. And then we want to go and interpret what do the axes mean? Like what does axis one mean? So with PCA, what we're going to do is we're going to make the biplot, right? So these two graphs in PCA are sometimes overlaid. And it's just giving an interpretation to the axes. So each of the points in the right panel is a bacterial species, and they're plotted by their taxonomy. The color is the phylum. And so the standard PCA interpretation is kind of, okay, so the axis one, we have, you know, some species that have high loadings on axis one, and that's what axis one kind of means. But you know, this is a bit of a mess, right? Like we have a nice clustering in the samples, but in the species part of the biplot, you know, there's just kind of a hairball, and there's no relationship. They're like similar, like species that are similar taxonomically are not put in similar places in the plot. So we'd like to kind of clean this up, and that's what the regularization is going to do. So so with the method that I'm going to tell you about, you can just ignore the sample plot for now. But what it's going to do is it's going to kind of clean up the species part of the biplot. So instead of just kind of a random mess of species, we're going to get kind of taxonomically similar species are going to be kind of clumped up, which gives kind of a easier or more parsimonious interpretation to the PCA axes. Okay, so the remainder of the talk is going to be kind of how do you do this? Okay, so first step is we're going to make a matrix. We're going to call it Q. It's going to be a positive semi-definite similarity matrix. And this is Q is going to encode the similarity between the variables. So when we have a phylogenetic tree, the ijth element of Q is going to be the length of the kind of ancestral branches that are shared by species I and J. So basically, if Qij is large, then species I and J are very similar to each other. If it's small, they're quite different from each other. If you just note, this is also a covariance matrix. If you kind of, well, it does, okay. Q is also a covariance matrix because it's positive semi-definite. Okay, so what we're going to do next is we're going to make this kind of simple model for our data. So the idea here is that we have some true signal, and it's structured according to the tree, but we only see a corrupted version of this. So how we kind of write that is, if you remember, X is our data matrix. Xi is the ith row of X, so it's one of the samples. So what we're going to do is we're going to call mu I is kind of the true underlying, you know, value, which is structured according to the tree. That's the Q, which encodes our tree structure. And then X, which is what we see, is just is a corrupted version of that. It's normal with mean, the truth, and some spherical covariance. Okay, so if we believe this model, then what we want to do is we don't want to do PCA on the X's. We want to kind of infer what the mu's were, what the truth was, and then we want to do PCA on that instead. Okay, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to do PCA on the Bayes estimates, the posterior estimates of the mu's given the X's. So if we just, you know, do out by Bayes' rule what this is, it turns out we get another normal distribution with some mean and covariance. And this S matrix is kind of important. Since it includes Q, it's going to kind of encode the structure that we had from the variables. Okay, and so it turns out that this kind of PCA, if we include the like non-spherical covariance properly, this is a generalized PCA. And the way there's this kind of notation for generalized PCA as a triple, which I think I'm not going to go into because it's a little bit technical and maybe not so useful. But the point here is that we're going to get, depending on which values of what the values of sigma 1 and sigma 2 are, we're going to get kind of slightly different generalized PCAs. And what's going to happen is it only depends on the relative sizes of these two. And so we get this kind of one-dimensional family of generalized PCAs that interpolate kind of smoothly between generalized PCA on this XQI and XII is standard PCA. So standard PCA doesn't take into account the structure of the variables at all. And then this generalized PCA is kind of the maximal constraint by the tree. So using this family, we kind of can smoothly trade off like how much we want the tree to count versus how much we want the data to count. Okay, so then we just need to decide on what to use for sigma 1 and sigma 2. So it's possible to actually choose the relative sizes just subjectively. You could, you know, for each kind of setting of sigma 1 versus sigma 2, you can plot what your ordination is, you can plot the PCA, the samples, and the species, and you can see just which one you like the best. And since we're kind of thinking of this as just exploratory data analysis, that's perfectly fine and a kind of nice way to do things. But since we also have this kind of full statistical, this probabilistic model, we can just estimate sigma 1 and sigma 2 by maximum likelihood. And I'm calling this procedure of, you know, making this family and then choosing which one to use by maximum likelihood, just adaptive GPCA. Okay. All right. So that's that. There is a little package on GitHub that will do this for you. And right, so you can install it pretty easily. It has what I think is a fun little like shiny gadget that you can play with that will allow you to choose the amount of tree structure. So I'll just show you some kind of pictures of that. So this is what happens. You type in like visualize full family of your data, and you'll get this, you'll get your kind of biplot of the samples and the species and a little slider bar that'll let you go from like most tree constrained to least tree constrained. So this is most tree constrained. on the left are the samples, and then on the right are species, again colored by the phylum. So you see there's kind of, this looks like a lot of tree constraint. And if you go kind of, you can do it less and less until you get to, you know, kind of, this is standard PCA with no tree constraint at all. And you just, okay. And so you can pick which one you like best and click done, and it's a shiny gadget, and it'll, since it's a shiny gadget, what it'll do is it'll just output, you know, the data structure that you need for this, and you can continue working on it in R. So, okay, so that's that. I'm also just going to show you an example of this method on some real data. So this is the antibiotic data set that I was telling you about before. So this is, again, we had three individuals. Their gut microbiomes were sampled over the course of several months, during which time they were given two courses of antibiotics. And so the way, this is the sample part of the biplot. What you can see is, or maybe you can't see, but the first axis kind of corresponds to an individual effect. So the individual is by shape. All of the points from individual D are kind of on the left, and then all the points from E in the middle, all the points from F on the right. And additionally, it looks like the second axis corresponds to kind of whether they were being given the antibiotic or not. So that's the color here. And finally, we have the species part of the biplot. So what we can do with this, which is a little bit better than standard PCA, is we can get the interpretation of the axes in terms of these little clades. So we can look at kind of this group of species here. We can go to our biologist collaborator and say, okay, do we know about anything about this kind of group of OT of species? Or we can look at, you know, this is a group of kind of closely related Firmicutes, and we can go to the biologist and say, okay, what's up with this? And they're kind of more likely to have an interpretation of that than they are to have an interpretation of like these seven completely unrelated species. Okay, and then last, okay, so I was telling you that the second axis kind of looks like it's an antibiotic effect. So what we can do is just, because this turns out to be really nice, we can look at the score along the second axis and plot it out by time. And so this is for each of the facets on the bottom are the individuals. The y-axis is the score in axis two, x-axis is time. And we see, you know, that really the second axis is an axis where the people are stable when they're not on the antibiotic, and then it kind of plummets for each of them. When they're given the antibiotic, it returns, it's kind of stable, plummets during the second course of the antibiotic, and then comes back. So, you know, in this case at least, it gives us a really nice kind of interpretable ordination. I think it does a bit better than standard PCA, and it gives you a whole bunch of nice plots. So just briefly, this can be, this doesn't have to be used strictly for microbiome data. You can use it in any case where you have a data matrix that you would otherwise plot with PCA, and you have kind of side information about the variables. So for example, if you have gene expression data and like a gene regulatory network, or you know, any, you know, there's all sorts of biological data sets where you have kind of a network structure to the variables. So you can use it on any kind of data like that. Maybe another example is like if you're doing like sampling air quality from different stations, you have and the stations are your variables. You can use the kind of distance, the physical distance between the stations as your distance between the variables. So I'm sure there's other examples where you could use this, but those are just two that came to mind. So I guess with that, I'll conclude. Thanks to, you know, my advisor. A bunch of people talked to me about this quite a lot. So thank you to them too, and to my funding. And thank you all for listening.
Thank you, Julia. Mm-hmm. I'll kick off the questions. The tree or network structure, Q,
yeah.
Will at times be itself estimated. And is there a natural way to propagate variation?
Yeah,
of
I don't.
The network or the tree in this model?
Yeah, so the question was, sometimes the tree or network structure is estimated. Is there a way to propagate the variation? I'm not sure if there's a particularly easy way to do that. If I were doing it, I would probably do like a bootstrapping and see how much the ordination changes. But that's kind of really time consuming. So, yes.
I'm kind of interested that once you start getting into sort of the ecology of the microorganisms, you were showing things at the phylum level, and it seems like as you're getting in the biplot closer and closer groups together, the PCA portion just falling apart.
Yeah.
Structure there.
Mm-hmm.
So things in different phylums especially, but even when you get down to genuses, you have dramatically different functions. So
yeah.
What do you think that maybe there's some sort of balance there, but is it best to sort of be doing that, or should we be going through the biplot individually and saying, okay, these are sort of individual genuses or something like that that are responding to something?
So the question is about kind of the level of kind of aggregation that you should be doing. So I think, so I guess part of the way, one kind of nice thing about this method is that it can kind of estimate for you how much aggregation to do. So if it doesn't see very much structure already in the data, it's going to do more. It's going to say, like, okay, I'm just going to look at differences between the phyla, whereas if it sees that there's already a lot in the data, it's going to allow you to kind of look at a finer grain level, at like maybe the genus level instead of the phylum level. In most of the plots, I plotted at the phylum level with only because, you know, there aren't very many phyla, and there also aren't very many colors that you can use in ggplot. But I think the genus level is often kind of more informative than the phylum level, in my experience at least.
So genera and phyla are these kind of arbitrary nodes in the tree where people just happen to choose. Is there a way to get the information happens to be at some unnamed node on the tree?
So the question is about, you know, the kind of arbitrariness of like phylum level versus genus level. So this actually, there's a kind of subtle distinction. This is using not the taxonomy, but it's using the tree. And so it's able to kind of do it very smoothly. When you have the most regularization towards the tree, it's doing something that's more similar to looking at the phylum level, and then less and less is more similar to looking at the species level. But it's kind of a lot more smooth than if you're just using the actual taxonomy.
Please join me in thanking Julia and all the speakers in just a second.